Accession number 8171, reel 14.
Mr. Metalman, reel 14. What's happened to you next?
Well, the whole situation now developed into the preparation for the Kursk battle. We didn't really know anything in detail about it, but we were being told by our officers that reinforcements had come up, tank reinforcements from the west, and that the time of Rückmarsch retreat would be over. Generally, one recognized, if I remember rightly, that a Hauptkampflinie now again was solidly established. The Red Army, which had followed from Stalingrad, had not really engaged. So that was an indication that they too were up to something, because we knew now they were strong, and all this talk by Hitler in the autumn before, I don't know whether I had mentioned it, we once listened to it on the radio in a peasant hut where he said that the Russian bear was defeated and all what was going to happen now, that was before Stalingrad, the autumn before Stalingrad, were mopping up operations. I might have mentioned it before, I don't know. We realized all this was lollipop, this was not true. So looking at it from the later point of view, we were now being told we were preparing to stop them and would go forward again. And for us, realizing that the Russian army, which had been engaged in Stalingrad, had not made contact with us, the indications were there that a big battle was in preparation somehow, a big clash. Now, as it so happened, as far as we were concerned, the Kursk battle was mainly a battle in the central section, Mittelabschnitt, as we called it. As you know, the general German battle organization in Russia was Nordabschnitt. Roughly, you can say, the line towards Leningrad. Mittelabschnitt, roughly the line towards Smolensk and Moscow. And Südabschnitt, roughly the line towards Stalingrad. So we were in the Südabschnitt, and for that reason, under the command of Manstein, not really engaged into the coming battle of Kursk, only on the periphery. I remember when the battle started, we were in the region around Belgorod. The whole Kursk battle took place over a very large area, I don't know, several hundred miles front line. There was plenty of fighting going on now in the summer. It was hot weather. Thinking about the snow before, now we had hot weather again. It was hot weather, and we were fighting Russians, but on both sides, in our area, there in the south, in Belgorod, was just to hold on to lines, I think. We never really wanted to go forward, and neither do I think that in that area the Russians moved forward. The big tank battle was further north, and I did not take part in it. Now, in those days, a very disturbing incident, which perhaps has much to do with my whole thinking, which later on developed about the war, happened in this way. We had taken a village and felt very victorious, somewhere near Belgorod, in that region, Belgorod, Charkov. And our feeling was good again. Now we had taken some village, and we felt we were matching up to the Russians. We're not going backward again, or not backward anymore. In this village, at the back of the village, one couldn't quite see it from the village. There was a hill, and the Russians were still on it, but they had been beaten. We were going around, and the village was a beautiful summer's day, and outside a cottage, there was a group of German officers, young officers in the ranks of major, colonel perhaps was the highest, Hauptmann, which is captain, and so on. And they behaved in a way which, as I said, was very disturbing to me and to all of us. They were sitting outside a cottage in the sun, full of victory. They were commanding officers. One of them, I understood, was the Prince of Hanover, a member of the royal family, the British royal family. The rumor was, somebody said, he is that's the Prince of Hanover. And he wore a monocle, an eyeglass in one of his eye. It was a young bloke, 27, 28, a real twit, you could see that. They were behaving in a very bad way, as whether they were on a stage, and we were standing all around them and gaping at them. Because they had their batmen around them, who more or less acted as waiters. They had some tables set out there, ammunition boxes and boards across or whatever. And there were bottles of champagne and other drinks and good food. And we could see that where the hell had they got all these things from, beer and bottles. Because at that time we ran out of our food supplies, which I told you we earlier had pinched from the food depots where they killed the Wirtschaftsführer. We were again next to starving rations and the ordinary Wehrmacht food, which was never very good. And to see all that good food there and their whole behavior, we didn't like it. And they were getting drunk. And a group of Russian prisoners came past there, led by some German soldiers, and amongst them at least one officer. This officer was a colonel. And one of these young German officers, there were about 8, 10 or so they were, getting a bit drunk and behaving in a funny way. We thought there were so many dead people lying around and some of the houses were burning. To behave like that at that time was a bit unsoldierly, we thought. One of the young officers, a major, he saw this Russian colonel, and he called him over. He said, "Come here a minute," or something like that. We all stood around. We, of course, we weren't involved in them. They were of a different class, almost of a different race. They ignored us. They only used us for battle. But in social life, they didn't want to have anything to do with us. They behaved as whether we were thin air. But I saw it, and we all saw it. We were about 20, 30, standing just around, sitting in the grass, watching them. The Russian colonel came over, and all the other Russian prisoners, they stopped. And he asked the Russian soldier something, the Russian colonel something. And he spoke German, and I think he asked him about something he wanted to know about the battle formation or what, and he said in German that he refuses to say anything on that. And this German officer, he kind of got mad. He said, "What, you refuse? You look at you, you are something like my Stallbursche, my stable lad." And in fact, Russian officers, they were very much of the working people. They were a different type to our German officers. Our German officers were a stuck-up, arrogant lot, while most Russian officers, they were down-to-earth people, like their own soldiers. And I think that had something to do also with it, that in the end, when it really came to the pinch, that they were better fitted to fight a war of this kind. They were down-to-earth people. They could understand their own people because they were of their people, while the German officers were not. Anyway, there were words between this Russian officers and that major, and he said to him anyway, remember, I am a colonel, you are a major. And the German officer, he pulled out a pistol and shot him right there. And there was almost a revolt amongst us. There was almost a revolt amongst the Russian prisoners who stood back 30, 40 yards. The other officers, they were kind of embarrassed by it, I ask you to understand, embarrassed. A man had been murdered like this, an officer who was taken prisoner. He was lying there, and I think he still was kind of alive, and blood was coming out from somehow. All of us were disgusted, and there was a kind of shouting amongst us that we said something, and other officers, I think a German colonel, he was very concerned about the whole development. He kind of said, now, quiet, 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 go back, or something. I remember that some of us went over to the Russians and apologized to the Russians and said something, we haven't done it, we haven't done that. And, but that was it, as far as this was concerned. They started laughing again and doing things and drinking, the officers, and we still were around. And then somebody said something about that hill. They are still up there. We knew they had guns up there, the Russians. We are going to have them, one of them said. We are going to attack. And we thought, attack? That hill? From here? You know, we had enough experience to realize that would have been a stupid thing to do. We hardly believed our ears there. After all this happened now, they were talking about attacking there, which was unnecessary, I suppose. In one way, one could have gone around it, and the Russians would have to retreat then. But there was a bet between two of the officers that we were going to take it by frontal attack. We heard all this. They betted. They were half drunk by now. And sure, suddenly from our own smaller commands, the command came back to your panzers and back to your units. And there it came. We're going to attack that hill. We had heard all this. Why this command now was coming to us. Hardly could believe it. And we were angry. But what could we do? The command was given. I think even one of these twits there, one of them blew a bugle, like in the old Prussian days under Frederick the Great, and we attacked on a wide front. They were not in the front line. I was in the front line, you know, with my unit. Well, it was my unit. I was the only soldier. We attacked, and it was madness, and the Russians bombarded us. But we broke through, and we took that hill. But I think I lost three of my mates, good mates. I lost them. I didn't see those officers again, at least not that day. And I thought, you bastard, you won your bet or whatever. And three of my mates paid with their lives. They were celebrating victory, I think, again, for having taken that hill. Of course, Russians killed. One didn't take much notice of that under circumstances like that. Of course not. But I never have forgotten that. Three mates of mine had died for officers making a bet. And we all knew about that. And all these things, then they build up to even more distrust. And there was a gap was appearing between the German officer class and the German soldier. I think that generally, definitely now in our unit, that the battle value was deteriorating. We just had no trust anymore, and we had no respect anymore for these kind of people. I remember that was a very strong feeling.
Do you know which particular unit these officers came from?
No. You know, we were not anymore 22nd Panzer Division because the 22nd Panzer Division more or less had ceased to exist. We were now battle groups. It was under Manstein's army, but I don't know the unit. There were panzer units, panzer soldiers, whether from the 7th Panzer Division or the 17th. The old German formations at that time had kind of ceased to exist in the Vormarsch. It was your division, and that was it. The whole retreat from Stalingrad had changed all that. There were the battle units. It seemed to be on a looser foundation altogether. No, I don't know.
Which of the particular officers had shot the colonel? Was it the Hanover?
No, it was not. It was not the Hanover bloke. No, it was a major. Because the colonel said to him, "No, don't forget here, I am a colonel. You are a major. What are you?" Because even in many ways, it was respected. A Russian officer of a higher rank was respected by lower officers, and that was the other way around too. I remember afterwards having read the accounts of the capitulation when Paulus capitulated, his adjutant Adam wrote a book about it. It appeared, I think, in East Germany. I read it a few years ago in German, of course. And he was very well treated by the Russians. For instance, when Paulus, I go back a little bit, Hitler made him a field marshal. A few days, I think 1-2 days before he capitulated, more or less hoping that he should die the hero's death as a field marshal and become a kind of martyr. When he was taken to the Russians in a village called Betovka near Stalingrad, all the German officers were taken there on the River Volga in the south of Stalingrad. The Russians, they raised their glass to his elevation to field marshal. They had a drink on it, which I found a very strange, but nevertheless a very gentlemanly, and I don't mean gentleman in the class sense, I mean between soldier and soldier, a very nice gesture, which I personally think was a good one.
What happened next?
Well, 40 years ago, what happened next exactly, that is difficult to remember. There was fighting going on, but more or less a holding battle all the time. We realized the Russians did not want to attack us, neither did we want to attack them, but we knew that a big battle was going on further north. We heard it sometimes in the night, and as history relates it now, it was the biggest tank battle of modern history at Kursk. Stalingrad was not a tank battle as such, but Kursk was thousands of tanks involved. I remember one incident which also had a bearing on my attitude to things, philosophically perhaps, later on in life. We were in a town called Komsomolsk, and we had lost quite a few troops, soldiers. We got new soldiers from Germany and also new weapons, anti-tank weapons. In those days, then, I was very much engaged with the anti-tank weapons and not with the tanks so much. And it was in that summer weather, we were in a park in Komsomolsk. We stayed there for a week or so, I think. Now, these new German soldiers came from Germany, and with them we had received new guns and a few new Zugmaschinen and ETC machine guns, I think. I was one of those who was commandeered to three others with ammunition boxes to, in this park, to set up a pulpit.
A what?
A pulpit, a Christian pulpit. because you will understand what I say in a minute, because the regimental party, or whether it was the regimental or battalion party, I don't know, then came later on. We drafted a kind of swastika flag in front of that pulpit. Was nicely on the lawn in this park. We all then had to troop up and line in a wide half circle around this pulpit, and then the officers came, and there was much saluting and handshaking going on, and there were two blokes, religious blokes. I think he was a regimental padre and some kind of an assistant, both in Wehrmacht uniform, but they had this arrangement by which you could see they were kind of a dog collar arrangement. You know, thinking of it now, I couldn't tell you even exactly how, but one could see it. They were partners. Now, in a short, a service was being held. We prayed for German victory. He prayed, and then we prayed, and they said something in between and whatnot, and we sung some sort of a hymn, and he went out and he blessed the weapons. He blessed us. And we were kneeling. And I was, when was this now, 23? I was just over 20 years, 20 and a half years old. And I still was kind of convinced of the righteousness of our cause, the great German Reich and the Führer, whatever little criticism we had made of him, it was still the thing to believe in. We had no real doubts in that. And while I was bending on my knees down there and praying for German victory, I knew very well that these weapons were going to be taken out again, or was being planned to take them out again next day or so on, to kill other people. And I thought, this man of God now, this man of peace, and there was in my youth much of the Christian teaching, which I basically agreed with even then, the basic Christian teachings, not to kill, things like that, that was a right way of running the life of humanity. Somehow I thought one day that must come, that nobody kills anyone. And that this man now in the cloth, that he was praying for German victory, that he was blessing weapons and soldiers, which he knew were going to be used for killing of people, I could not tie that up, and that too is something I never have quite forgotten. At that time, that happened about the same time with these officers, and there I remember my father once told me, and my father had been a soldier in the First World War, and he was a very disappointed man, a very disillusioned man about all this, the war or so, and the Nazi regime, he was not keen on that. But when I became a soldier, the Russians were not... Wait a minute, was it? No, the Russians were not involved in the war then. They were more or less, and the English were waiting in England. There was this lull of the fighting, which we called the dishonest war. There was some sort...
Phony war.
The phony war, yes. It was called that in Germany too. There was something seemed not quite right there. The British didn't try anything, and the Germans didn't try anything. And the rumor was that Hitler, of course, had made a pact with Chamberlain at Munich that we should have a free hand to operate against the East. That was basically what was our thought behind that. Anyway, after this officer business, it came back to me what my father had told me. He said, look, he said, boy, you're going out into the war and you're going to fight the English and perhaps some others also. Let me tell you one thing. Those English soldiers you will try to kill, and they try to kill you, they are not your enemy. They are just the same as you. They got their problems at home. Most probably they have been unemployed, the same as we have been unemployed here. They got to struggle to make ends meet to feed their children and all that. They are nice people. They are really your friends in many ways, he said. They got the same problem like you. And believe me, I had the experience, I know. And I was very angry with my father to say a thing like that, because because he also said, your real enemy, they are the ones on the parade ground who march in front of you in the fine German uniform, who eat better food than you, who wear their monocles, he said, who give you orders, who don't want to have anything to do with you. They are the same, he said, who live in Blankenese, that was our rich suburb in Hamburg. They live in that big villas because they are the ones, they make money out of war, they make money out of arms production, they are shareholders at Thyssen, at Siemens, he said. They are the same, basically the same. He said, the only real war which is good for you is to unite with your English soldiers and fight those who make money out of the whole thing. And I was so disgusted with my father. I remember I argued with him. But when I saw these aristocrats and I saw listened to this priest, I thought very much of my father had told what my father had told me.
Had the service of the blessing of the weapons and so on been an unusual thing then?
Yes, inasmuch that the whole time I was in Russia, it was always a turbulent time. There was so much trouble. There was hardly a chance for having a service or so. But somehow, I don't know how it came about. There was some time, and this bloke, somehow he was around there, I suppose, and our commander, his name was Colonel Madsen, I remember. He was a landowner in Schleswig-Holstein. He was an elderly bloke of, well, elderly. I'm older than him now. In his 50s he was. And I think he was rather religious, and somehow I think he had organized it, our battalion commander, Madsen, Colonel Madsen.
He was a landowner of what, did you say?
A landowner in Schleswig-Holstein, in the province of Schleswig-Holstein. He was not a von, so he was not an aristocrat, but he was a landowner. He was not a bad bloke.
What happened next?
Well, what happened next... The situation was fluid. What we notice now coming into Russian villages and with our contact with ordinary Russian people, that too had changed. On the foremarsh, they were very subdued and we just gave an order or so. They carried it out and there was no kind of feeling of resistance. We always had a curfew. Russians never were allowed after dark to be anywhere in the village or so. They had to lock themselves up. Their whole attitude to us now, when we came into their houses and said out or something like that, okay, they went out, but there was a certain smile on their face as whether they were going to say to us, as we were saying to us, well, times are changing. It won't be much longer that you give orders here. It was, you could cut it with a knife. It was real. The whole situation had changed, and to us it was a very worrying thing. We were, because the Battle of Kursk, we realized, which was now in full going, it wasn't going well because we hadn't moved forward. At that time I also remember Russian villager had been shot because he was moving around at midnight somewhere, most probably to look after his chicken or what do I know. And one of us, I knew him by name, a good friend of mine, he shot him. He called the Losungswort, you know, the parole, and the Russian couldn't answer, and he quickly shot him, and that bloke now was dead. Next day he was recommended for some good action. My friend, I think even he got a medal for it. And we didn't like it because there was great resentment in that village. And we were even being told not to walk alone in the dark, to always walk in twos. Now, this was something new too. Up to then, we were never afraid of Russian villages. But things were definitely changing. I remember we stayed there a few days and they organized a kind of a little funeral, and the women, they walked past us, they were crying, but the way they were looking at us, there was a certain look in their eyes. You wait. You wait.